Welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 12th of June 2020 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live tonight at RadioAlbion.com because we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, Communism by the Back Door and the Freemasonic victory of World War II and the possibly soon to be released Churchill's body count. Possibly. Mr. Dennis Wise, how are you doing, Dennis?
I'm okay. I've just lacked a little motivation this week in certain areas, which, is not a good thing when you're doing stuff like this, but hopefully I'm back on track tonight.
You're not coming down with coronavirus or anything like that, are you, Dennis?
Too tough for that kind of thing.
Good man. I thought you were. I thought you would be. We've got some exciting stuff that we're going to get into tonight anyway. I've got a little bit of sad news just to let listeners know about. First off, Eddie Morrison, who I used to do, I did a couple of live shows or a couple of Daily Nationalists with him a year or so back. Apparently he's passed away. I wasn't on particularly good terms with him when he passed away, but it is sad to see a long time nationalist go after 50 years or whatever. I think he was 71 years of age. He was anyway. So rest in peace, Eddie. I'm not sure if you knew of Eddie Morrison. Did you, Dennis? Used
I didn't to be in the National know, Front. But it's always sad when you lose a nationalist.
It is. But we've got more positive things to be talking about as well. Tommy Robinson has pulled out of encouraging people to go and have a fight with Black Lives Matter tomorrow, which is great news. The ethno-nationalist side over here in Britain, we've been saying nobody should go to that. It's obviously a trap. It'll be just like Charlottesville. And the press, the Guardian and the Mail were all reporting about how far-right thugs were going to turn up in London. And Tommy's pulled out now, and it looks like instead there's going to be veterans there, which is wonderful because the press has called them all thugs and white supremacists. So that's good news. Oh, and also Baden-Powell's statue is still there, and because they were going to pull that one down, and all the locals came out and refused to let them take it away. And lots of other former Cub Scouts and people that were just supportive of Baden-Powell, they've all been there to keep the statue safe. So that's some good news as well.
He was a fan of Adolf Hitler, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. He he went to stay with Mussolini. He was very impressed with Mussolini's youth movement that he had there and also with the Hitler Youth. And he even had a swastika arm badge at one point. But he wasn't supportive of Adolf Hitler once the war had started, or I think just before then as well. There were some things which he thought were a bit negative, but they still want to attack him, even though he's, you know, one of the greatest Britons that ever lived. He's improved the lives of millions of young boys, gave them the right mindset to enter adulthood with and tried to make them honorable and live up to their ancestors. And today, the left want to pull down his statue. Disgraceful.
Well, there's another one they want to pull down as well, actually, which is the Cecil Rhodes statue, where it's set in a building where you have to look up to it. And obviously, some people obviously don't want to be looking up to Cecil Rhodes. But Cecil Rhodes was, well in with the Rothschilds, so I can never foresee that statue coming down. And the other one they never ask about is the one outside the BBC where they have the old man behind the naked child, which was actually sculptured by a paedophile. And the BBC have refused to take that one down. So that left, I would have thought, would have bothered with that one, which to me is one of the first ones should have come down.
Yeah, I heard about that, but I wasn't sure of the history behind it. So thanks for letting us know that. With the Cecil Rhodes one, I mean, Cecil Rhodes was quite a good guy, really, by the white man's standards. But I knew that he had borrowed money from the Rothschilds. He'd worked with the Rothschilds with the De Beers, but I hadn't sort of put two and two together. But yeah, that might well prevent him from being taken down.
His name is used for the Rhodes Scholar, which is at Oxford for all these people around the world to come to Oxford, like Clinton did, and be taught in the ways of the New World Order, and then sent back out, back to their own countries, hopefully to be president or prime minister, or even got on to the UN to serve that that set of people out there. So, you know, the Rhodes Scholarship is an important thing to the New World Order, which is another reason why I don't think it'll ever come down.
It's the recipients of the Rhodes Scholarship that are calling for him to be pulled down. It's
really?
All these, yeah, it's all these black Africans that are on the Rhodes Scholarship that are calling for him to come down. Someone said, well, why don't you just change his name to Cecil Zimbabwe? Because, of course, Zimbabwe was amazing. Named after him.
Such
Rhodesia. Rhodesia. Well, yeah, well, we've got some interesting history to look into tonight. We're going to be looking at a book called Grand Orient Freemasonry Unmasked as the Secret Power Behind Communism. And that, so the sound of the title, it makes you think, well, that's probably a recent book, but it's actually a reprint of a book from 1884 that goes into quite a lot of detail over the last 300 years, basically, and how Freemasonry fermented all these revolutions. And we're going to look at the foreword of it tonight, which kind of summarizes it all. But where did you first hear about this book then, Dennis?
Well, I first heard about it when I was looking into Freemasonry in The Secret Masonic Victory. But then I was reminded of it again by somebody who was doing a Skype with me. And obviously, I managed to find it online, downloaded it, and it is interesting, you know, because people may think I've got something against Freemasonry. Well, I do, so you know, you'll find out why more tonight.
Well, it's a very well referenced book. It's got lots of quotes in it, and it tells you exactly where the quotes come from. And it was written by a priest, actually, of the Catholic Church. And it was authorized by the Catholic Church, and it was a recommended book by the Catholic Church. And of course, today they would probably try to completely distance themselves from it. But that shows you just how different the church is today from how it used to be. It was originally published as The War of Antichrist with the Church and Christian Civilization, a review of lectures delivered in Edinburgh in 1884 by Monsignor George F. Dillon, D.D. So that shows you the way that they saw this. They saw this as the Antichrist fighting against the church. So communism was seen as the Antichrist. It was anti everything that Christ was about. And they linked this in with Freemasonry as being the germ from which communism sprang, basically. I think this time in the late 19th century, there are a lot of really interesting lectures about. There's a lot of books made from lectures at that time. There's also a book called The Races of Britain, which, again, it's a series of lectures that were given to the Anthropological Society about the racial makeup of Britain and the history of it. And I can recall reading lectures about slavery that were written around about the time that the slaves were freed. It seems that at that time you could go and listen to, if you wanted to, you can go and listen to some really interesting information that was being presented. And I can't think of anyone today, apart from nationalist conferences, of course, can't really think of anyone today that I'd like to go and hear read out a lecture or make a presentation.
Well, what I tell you to learn from the discovery of Freemasonry was, when the whites get accused, as I got accused once when I did the Great Story Never Told, for bringing up the Indian Wars and how the Indians were practically wiped out, and a lot of nationalists in America weren't really happy with me. But what I went on to learn, like in certain other areas as well, it's not so much the white people. They're the foot soldiers, don't get me wrong, but they're the soldiers taking orders. It's the people in charge of them, in charge of these armies, in charge of these governments. It's the Freemasons who are behind all this, and of course we know who's behind Freemasonry, right? Behind all this annihilation of races.
Well, I think we could see that when we did that little series of episodes looking at the Blyberg massacres and the sending the Slavs back to their countries to be just destroyed by the communists, and the generals and the heads of the army were absolutely disgusted, and they wanted to revolt against what they'd been told to do. But the higher ups had forced them to do it, hadn't they? And they couldn't work out why. You know, they couldn't work out why. And that's the connection. All these higher ups are Freemasons.
Well, this, they'll never look at that, though. They'll just look at what's in front of them, which was a white army.
Yeah, yeah. Well. Again, that's the other thing, isn't it? The crimes of our leaders, we get blamed for them. We get blamed, particularly now.
They get made into statues.
Yeah, particularly now. This work was dedicated to the memory of His Holiness Pope Leo XIII, whose command to the faithful to tear away the mask from Freemasonry inspired the title of the new edition in 1950. So again, that shows us how the Catholic Church was really against Freemasonry. This is the head of the Catholic Church who is commanding the faithful to tear the mask away from Freemasonry. Is that a pope that you know of, Dennis? Leo XIII?
Louis XIV, did you say?
Leo the 13th.
Leo the 13th. No, I haven't got any notes on this fella.
Because you often hear of Pius.
I must have missed that one out.
Often hear of Pius the 10th. I mean, I must admit, I don't really know, you know, which pope is which, but some of them were very, very good and some of them were very, very bad. Obviously,
yeah, what I've got is Pius the 8th for some reason. Is that right? No.
Yeah, well, we've got a quote coming up from Pius the 8th in a minute, I believe. Yes, we have.
All right, yeah. Yes. I've missed Port Leo out, so I'm sorry, I can't help you on that one.
I've just got a lot of noise here in the background.
All right. Well, they looked at it as a battle between good and evil, which it was, really, because the Illuminati had made use of the lodges all around the world by amalgamating with Freemasonry. And once the Illuminati has struck that deal, then it kind of spread like wildfire, this Enlightenment.
Yeah, that's when it really, really took off. But I mean, even before the Illuminati, I think we'd had the French Revolution, had we? Or was that around about the same time?
No, I think that was the start of the Illuminati revolutions, really.
Right.
But don't get me wrong, I don't think Freemasonry was a good thing before that.
Yeah, because in Germany, they sort of said when it first started off, it wasn't that bad and it was Aryan. And then after the Illuminati, it got corrupted, but it was always corrupted. It wasn't ever Aryan. There was always corruption there. As we'll see here, there was a big Jewish influence. Before that, we got to the Illuminati and the communist influence. Well, the first quote, as you were saying, Dennis, is from Pope Pius the 8th, and he says, "Lying is their rule, Satan is their god, and shameful deeds their sacrifice." And that was from Tradite Humilitate Nostrae in 1829. So you're saying you know something about this Pope?
Pius the 8th. Yeah, it doesn't get any clearer than that, does it?
No.
Lying is the rule, Satan the god. He was head of Catholic Church and ruler of the Papal States from 1829 to 1830, which is only 1 year, which it was one of the shortest, if not the shortest, of the 19th century. And because it was so short, it was suspected that he was murdered, which was never really proven, but one, you know, thinks it's highly possible because he's dealing with people who are ruthless and who are killers.
Well, he's definitely setting a good example there. And that was Pius VIII. There's also Pius X, because there's a Society of St. Pius X as well. It seems popes that are called Pius are quite pious. They live up to their names, which is good. Next up, we have Gregory the 16th, who compares the secret societies to a sink in which are congregated and intermingled all the sacrileges, infamy, and blasphemy which are contained in the most abominable heresies. That's from Mirare Vos. And again, that's 1832. So that's 3 years later. Gregory the 16th. Is that one you've heard of?
Yeah, he died in 1846. And again, he was head of the Catholic Church Papal States. He was a conservative and a real traditionalist, apparently. He opposed modernizing reforms throughout Europe, saw them as fronts for the revolutionary left, encouraged missionaries active abroad, and condemned the slave trade, believe it or not. And, however, it says in Wikipedia, it was his harsh repression and financial extravagance left him deeply unpopular. But, you know, that's just an opinion, I suppose.
So he's probably pretty good if Wikipedia don't like him. And so he was a conservative and a traditionalist, and here he is saying the secret societies are sacrilege, is infamy and blasphemy. Next one is Pius IX. Those baneful secret sects which have come forth from the darkness for the ruin and devastation of church and state. Pope Pius IX, Quo Pluribus, 1846, to whom he later applied the words of our Lord, "You are from your father the devil, and it is the works of your father that you wish to do." Pius IX, from Singulari Quadem, 1864. So we can see that the church is really going for it. It's setting itself up against Freemasonry, that they are the two opposing poles, aren't they, is the Catholic Church and Freemasonry.
Yeah, and this is what the whole series of world wars were all about, to be honest. And as soon as they managed to separate, get the separation of state and church, that was the beginning of the end, really. Again, he was head of the church until 1878, when he died. He was the longest reigning elected pope, served for 31 years, so he knew his job. He convened the First Vatican Council, would you believe? Which decreed the papal infallibility, but the council was cut short owing to the loss of the papal states. And the papal states, if anybody doesn't know, was an area in Italy, certain territories, which was direct sovereign rule under the Pope. But things must have changed with the revolutions going on, obviously.
Well, what you were saying there about how the splitting of the church and the state, because we're told that, oh, that was a good thing today. We needed to split the church from the state. Well, no, you didn't, because the state had the power to put a stop to the communism and the Freemasonry and all the immorality when it was still joined there with the church. It had to uphold morality, not just keep the law of, don't steal or don't damage property, but it had to uphold Christian law as well, traditionalism. So, of course,
they would have known if they could separate that's a huge plus for them.
Well, that was a big aim of it, wasn't it? Was to separate the two, to cut the power out from them.
It says here also that he grew increasingly disillusioned with the liberal nationalist agenda after a series of terrorist attacks sponsored by Italian liberals and nationalists, which included the assassination of one of his ministers. So, again, you know, we are dealing with killers. You know, they have no bounds.
And not very good nationalists there either.
No.
So they're not always good. We've got a quote here from Cardinal Manning. He says, "You see then before you the two systems. On the one side is the church of men of goodwill, one holy, visible, and universal. On the other, the Ecclesia Malignantium, as the scriptures call it, the church of men of evil will, one in enmity against the church of God, though manifoldly as the multiplicity of evil, unholy in thought, word, deed, intention, and will, invisible because secret, stealthy, subterraneous, working out of sight, and in darkness undermining the private purities of homes, the public order of states, and the thrones of princes." And that's Cardinal Manning from Rome and the Revolution, 1867.
That's right, yeah. He was actually Archbishop of Westminster. He was an Anglican who actually converted to being a Catholic. And the reason for that is he was shattered in 1850 when the Privy Council ordered the Church of England to institute an evangelical cleric who denied the sacrament of baptism. So therefore, he felt this a grave heresy, which kind of made it a man-made church rather than one of, heavenly.
I think a lot of Anglicans left the Anglican Church when they came out with women priests and moved to Catholicism. We've got one final quote here from Leo XIII. He says, "Filled with the spirit of Satan, who knows how to transform himself into an angel of light? Freemasonry puts forward as its pretended aim the good of humanity, paying a lip service to the authority of law and even to the obligations of religion. It aims, as its own statutes declare, at the destruction of civil authority and of the Christian priesthood, both of which it regards as the foes of human liberty. Leo XIII, 1902.
Yeah, sample of which we saw with the Spanish Civil War and the destruction of probably the most priests and bishops ever killed in Europe. Pope Leo led the Catholic Church from the 20th of February 1878 to 20th of July 1903, the oldest pope reigning until the age of 93. He issued a record 11 papal encyclicals on the Rosary, earning him the title of the Rosary Pope. So he was the first pope to never have held any control over any of the papal states. So, but still, as you say, and to put it so eloquently, filled with the spirit of Satan, who knows how to transform himself into an angel of light, you know, wonderful.
So he would have been the pope that was excluded from the Versailles Treaty then?
This is the one, yeah. Obviously, this is not learnt so much in history, but came across it in the Secret Masonic Victory, which left him out of the peace meeting, which wasn't really a peace meeting. I keep trying to tell people that it was actually a celebration of Freemasonry, of the destruction they thought then of the Catholic Church was complete.
Well, that makes sense, because the Catholic Church are the big enemies of the Freemasons, and for some reason the head of the Catholic Church is not there at the Versailles Treaty, along with all the other countries, all the other heads of countries, and very conspicuous by his absence is the Pope. So it does sort of imply that Freemasonry may well have had something to do with that. And of course, also, every one of the representatives from these countries had a Jewish advisor with them.
Yeah, that's right. And if you go on a little bit further, you'll then find out, you know, you can see the reason why a Catholic Hitler destroyed all the Freemason lodges, and also why the Vatican helped to install Hitler as the dictator of Germany, they're trying to make the final battle.
Right, so the Catholic Church may have not been very pleased about Hitler's treatment of the Jews, which is what they were saying later on, but he was also the enemy of the Freemasons, which doesn't really get so much publicity today, does it?
And when you
see the animosity between these two here, then you can see, well, this is a very much a reason for the Pope to be supporting National Socialism. The fact that they were so against Freemasonry.
That's the reason why at the end of the war they helped get out the National Socialists and the Axis soldiers out of Europe, away from being massacred by these communists.
Indeed. And also, just before we move on, I just say also about the Versailles Treaty, because a lot of these leaders were saying, well, nobody was happy after that. This was supposed to be a meeting of how Europe is going to be after the war, and yet none of the countries from Europe have gone away satisfied. So what was going on there? Well, there was one group that were satisfied, and that was the Jews. They were the hidden country who was being represented there, because each person that was arguing, particularly in Poland, they were arguing for the benefits of minorities in these countries. And by the minorities, they meant the Jews. There was
170, apparently, Jews at the Versailles Treaty. It was held by Rothschild, the head Rothschild at that time. I think it was Baron Louis. So again, you know, he's head of the most Freemasons in this country. You know, it all falls in line. The actual war, World War One, which very few people actually could answer why it was fought, was the bringing down of these monarchs who were backed by the Vatican, these Catholic monarchs. And if they can get rid of the monarchs, then, you know, again, it's a big feather in the cap.
And it wasn't just to Germany's detriment either, this Versailles Treaty. In Henry Ford's book, it doesn't talk really about what happened to Germany, but what happened to Poland and how the Jews were given all these benefits in Poland, and how that the reason for that is because all these other countries had these Jewish representatives there. So the Jews were happy at the end of this. In each country that they were in, they got what they wanted, but the countries themselves lost out. Like Germany lost out, lost half of Germany.
Well, I think the actual cutting up of Germany was that was just the beginning of what they intended Germany to be at the end, which was nothing. They were going to sell it off completely, because we went into the loans of the Jung plan, and and the earlier one, which was a means to just breaking up Germany completely, but looking to the world, in the eyes of the world, feasible, because they haven't paid back the debts.
Well, let's have a look at this foreword to the book then. The author wrote the book in order to do his part in carrying out the instruction given by the Sovereign Pontiff in the encyclical Humanum Genus, when he called upon the pastors of souls to whom it was addressed to instruct the people as to the artifices used by societies of this kind in seducing men and enticing them into their ranks, and as to the depravity of their opinions and the wickedness of their acts. So this is carrying out the Pope's wish to teach people about the truth of what is really going on, about how these secret societies will use flowery language to describe something like human rights and equality and tolerance and all these flowery words that sound good, but in actual fact are very evil and encourage wickedness. So that's what the Pope is suggesting. That's what this book is about. And that's what's continuing today, isn't it? With the language that they use today. Diversity, tolerance.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I can remember the speech of Kennedy's when he was talking about the evil of the secret societies. It wasn't long after again he was killed again. And he was killed in a Masonic square, believe it or not, which was well known in Dallas. So, like I said, these are killers. You know, they will go and do whatever it takes.
Well, Monsignor Dillon's work has already been honoured by the Holy Father himself with so marked and so unusual an approbation that there is no need for us to accord it any further praise than merely to take note of the fact. The book was presented to His Holiness, accompanied by an Italian version of its table of contents and of long extracts from its principal sections, and Leo XIII was pleased to order that the Italian version should be completed and the book printed and published at Rome at his own expense. And that quote comes from the month, September 1885. So this shows you this is an official book from the Catholic Church, isn't it?
Yeah, like you said early on, it's taken from these lectures which were given to enlighten the people, because with it being a secret society, I mean, the fact that it is a secret society should raise red flags all over the place. Well, because it's a secret society, you know, it's very difficult. Even I had difficulty trying to get, you like to get two sources at times, but you're lucky to get one source because it's that secret. And they would have had a hell of a job trying to explain to people who would have just thought it was a conspiracy theory.
Well, it's amazing to think it's endorsed by the Church. I mean, it's called conspiracy theories today, isn't it? It's banished to the dark corners of the internet and banned from YouTube. And this was mainstream Catholicism 100 years ago, and this was fully backed by the Church. You think how the Church is now? It's it's turned its back on all its traditions, all its teachings. It's become totally corrupted. And this confirms what you say about the war and how it was the Antichrist against Christ. It was against the real Christians against these progressive, not really Christians. Well. Preaching Freemasonic ideals as if they were Christian ideals.
Well, this goes back to the Crusades, where you've got the Knights Templars going out to the Crusades and learning different angles about stories about the Bible. And obviously, the one they brought back was the Luciferian doctrines, which claimed that the real God was Satan, who was, he wasn't thrown out of heaven or kicked out of heaven, but came down from heaven to help humanity. The real bad guy was our God, who they want to wipe off the face of this world with the name of Jesus Christ, his son, as well. So these are, this has been going on for a long time. Like you said, it wasn't until really the Illuminati really joined up with the Freemasons, where they got a real foothold around the world, where they could then secretly implement, obviously, their agenda.
Well, that's where they got a lot of the information from, wasn't it? Because it's very influenced by Judaism and also influenced by Islam and Gnostic versions of the two. Yeah. And that's where a lot of it was picked up, was in the Holy Land, unfortunately, when the Templars were out there and the Crusaders were out there. And then when the
Templars survived, obviously, they came to Scotland.
Yeah.
And set up a lodge there, a church there, and then eventually moved down into England and amalgamated to the Freemason we see today.
That seems to be the route that it took, and before then it would possibly started off around about Herod's time. There's a tradition that goes back to King Herod the Great, and the head of John the Baptist, and that head being an oracular head, like a talking head that they would have, this magic head that would foretell the future. And also back then they were talking about Egyptian magic and Gnosticism. And we had the Alexandrian Gnostics that corrupted Christianity with their Gnostic Gospels. He had all that around about the same time. And that was picked up again, basically, at the time of the Templars out in the Holy Land.
Yeah. This could be evil all along, whether you decide that, you know, Satan is the real God or Adonai is the real God for us, is up to you. But to me, I look at the people who support this, these doctrines, and they're probably the most evil people I've ever known.
Well, part of the teaching is that man can become a god himself, and that goes back to that's what the serpent said. Eat the forbidden fruit, and your eyes will be open, and you'll be like a god. And that's this Illuminism, isn't it? The Illuminati.
You're spot on there, because people may wonder, for instance, just say off the top of my head, that Bush invaded Iraq and killed a million people. And still, even today, there's come back on that particular invasion. How does one sleep at night? Well, if you believe you're a god, you'll go to sleep quite easily, because whatever you do is justified.
Well, they'll be taught to silence their conscience, and that their conscience is an earthly thing, and to be like a god, you shouldn't have a conscience.
That's right. Now,
that'll be part of their teaching, would be to overcome their natural morality that they had. Well, despite the fact that the lectures were delivered by a Catholic prelate to an audience composed mainly of members of his own faith, we feel that the subject of international political skullduggery is one which cannot fail to interest Catholic and non-Catholic alike, the more so indeed, since events in the course of the decades following the original publication of this book have confirmed the lecturer's thesis. And you think, the book was originally 1888 and the reprint was 1950. And this foreword is being written in 1950 because everything that was said in it has obviously come true, and even more so since then, because we've had the EU since then and we've had the UN since then. And they both very much tie in with it.
Yeah. Now I read somewhere the other day that they were trying to implement another, Holy Roman Empire with the UN, which is ridiculous, really, because there's no God in their constitution. And so when people say, like, you know, they're trying to do what Hitler did, I don't believe it. I really don't, because they don't believe in our God.
Well, this is one of the tricky, sticky ways that they do this, because they will say that, there are many ways to God. There isn't only just one God. You've got Muhammad's God, you've got the Jews' God, you've got the Hindu God, you've got the Buddhist God. So we're not against God. We believe in God. But what that's actually saying is, well, none of them can be true then, because there's only one truth. So what they're effectively saying is there is no God, and it doesn't matter. Because there is no God, you can say you worship whichever God, and it's all the same because none of them are true. That's what they're actually saying. Yeah. But the way they put it, that's what I mean by they'll use flowery language. They'll use this positive language to make you think that it's something moral and it's something good that they're doing. And in actual fact, it's not. And that's what they're trying to expose here. Let me have a look here. Explaining what lies behind secret societies. His object was to give a clear outline of the whole question of secret atheistic organization, its origin, its nature, its history in the last century, and in this, and its unity of satanic purpose in a wonderful diversity of forms. So he's talking about atheism there as well, back then in 1888. He found that it was necessary to do this because very few, if any, attempts have been made in our language to treat the subject as a whole. Several writers appear to assume as known that which was really unknown to very many, and few touched at all upon the fact of the supreme direction given to the universality of secret societies from a guiding, governing, and even to the rank and file of the members of the secret societies themselves, unknown and invisible hunter. So the hidden hand. The hidden hand there.
Yeah. It's not all Freemasons who accept this concept of Freemasonry. They honestly believe they're doing good for society, especially the, you know, they have the children's hospitals, they give millions every year. But there's a higher power there, which, you know, the higher Freemasons, certainly the 33 degrees, certainly know what it's all about.
Well, and also what it's saying here, it's not just the Freemasons, it's all the secret societies. They're all pushing the same thing. They may have different names, I mean, especially in America, they've got lots of different names for them, but they're all pushing the same.
Is exactly the same. Some people don't call it Freemasonry, but the agenda is exactly the same.
Even the more extreme ones, like the Ordo Templo Orientis, Aleister Crowley, the Church of Satan. I mean that's the extreme side of it, and then you got the Shriners. Trying to think of some of the other.
Well, there's some that we don't even know the names of that secret.
All these secret societies, they're all pushing for the same thing. And there was, what he's saying here is that there was a guiding committee or a guiding group that was telling them what they should be doing, basically. So there was a unity between
the rebuilding of the temple when it comes down to it.
Yeah, but the unity that would be the unity in it would be the Jewish thread that's running through all of them, because it's all based upon Jewish ideas. Well, Monsignor Dillon does not speak explicitly of the two currents of thought and action proceeding from the Masonic French Revolution, namely the current of Rousseauist Lockean Masonic liberalism and the current of socialism and communism. Implicitly, however, he does so when on the one hand he foreshadows the United States of Europe and world federalism, and on the other quotes the infamous Declaration of the International in 1868. And this is interesting, because what he's saying there is both of these come from Freemasonry. Communism on the one hand, and liberalism and John Locke on the other hand.
Mm. So, but if you remember, I told you about the 33 degree Freemason. I mean, there's a lot of people in America who don't like communism, and we're all aware that they were in World War II to help save communism in the East. But even today, this 32 degree Freemason was having a conversation with, said if you keep mentioning Freemasonry, actually was the beginnings of communism, formed the beginnings, then I'm going to end it here. And I said, you better end it then, because trust me, what I'm saying is true.
Well, we got two branches from it, haven't we? You got the communism on the one hand, and then you got your liberalism and your progressivism and promotion of homosexuality and diversity on the one side of it, and then on the other side of it, you got the communism side of it that you had in the Soviet Union. Both of them come from the
West,
the same.
You know, it was Western Freemasonry and Eastern Communism, which destroyed National Socialism.
And I think the right and the left came from this time as well, didn't it? From the French Parliament, they had a right wing and a left wing, and that's originally where it came from.
Which ended in 1945, to me anyway, ended the right wing. I mean, they were totally destroyed, totally overturned, and either executed or hounded wherever they went around the world. And so when you got, as I said today, the situation is right and left, but it's right and left of the victors. Some don't want that communism and others do, which we've seen them happily battling away with Trump.
Well, it's a distraction anyway, isn't it, really? I mean, why would you want right or left? What you want is whoever's doing the best for you, for your nation. And that's what you want, is what is best for your nation, and not what's on the right or whatever's on the left, because that's multicultural. That's saying that you're united by the right side of politics, or you're united by the left side of politics. And what you want to be united by is your nation, and you want the people that are representing you to be doing what's best for your nation, which sometimes has elements of right-wing philosophy and sometimes has elements of left-wing philosophy.
Well, what's interesting, I spoke last week about how Trump walked across cleared the area of protesters and walked across to the church, and just simply held up the Bible, which to me spoke volumes. But since that time, the general who was with him, who walked across with him, has now apologized, which leads me to believe he must have been one of Obama's men, because Obama got rid of a lot of the military at the top, and he obviously didn't realize what Trump was going to do. But he's kind of saying to him, you know, this isn't, I'm not on the right.
Well, what were the Democrats doing? They were all getting down on their knees, weren't they, with African prayer scarves and bending down on one knee.
Yeah.
Funny kneeling enough, before the communists.
26 cities that rioted, I think it was 25. Well, but certainly if it was 26, there were 25 which were Democratic mayors who control the councils, who control the police, which is why Donald Trump turned around and said, if you don't sort it, I'll send in the army.
Well, this is a good example of, isn't it? You got Donald Trump is on the right, the authoritarian stance, law and order. We've got to come down hard on it. And then you got the left, which is just destroy everything, get rid of the police. We don't want law or order. And neither of them are saying, look, what we need is white people here, black people there. We want what's best for white people in white territory, and we want blacks having what's best for black people in another territory. But nobody's saying that, because that's the natural way, that's the Christian way, and what they're pushing is this right wing and left wing, which is a distraction from what we should be doing. And this is the point of what this guy is saying as well, because he's talking about how the state should be following Christian doctrines. It should be part of the a union of Catholic states, not all ruled by one state, but a union of sovereign Catholic states doing what is best for each sovereign Catholic state. And some people may say, well, I'm Protestant and I'm not too into the Catholics, but it means following the Christian law. It means following the Bible. And in the Bible, it lays it all out, how to have a political state. That's what the whole of the Old Testament is about. These are the laws you need to have a functioning ethno-state.
And this is why we see the split in the EU with Poland and Hungary, which are basically Catholic states who refused any of these migrants' entrance. But that's a split with the EU overall policy. It's tear our borders down. And it's a free-for-all communism, if you like.
Well, that's why they're the enemy, isn't it? Because they're still Christian states, and they're still promoting that. And that's, again, why they don't have immigration, they don't have the promotion of gay rights and all of that sort of stuff there. And that's why they're hated, absolutely hated.
Yeah, and you can see by this where it's all come from.
Well, yeah, and it talks about it later on as well, actually, about how these states that remain Christian will be designated like rogue states. And it's, that's what we've got. Well, let's have a look at this Declaration of the International. This was a communist international. This declaration, formulated at the International Congress held at Geneva in 1868 and quoted by Monsignor Dillon in his preface, is well worth reproducing, at least in part. It runs as follows. The object of the International Association of Workmen, as of every other socialist association, is to do away with the parasite and the pariah. Now, what parasite can be compared to the priest? God and Christ, these citizen providences, have been at all times the armour of capital and the most sanguinary enemies of the working classes. It is owing to God and to Christ that we remain to this day in slavery. It is by deluding us with lying hopes that the priests have caused us to accept all the sufferings of this earth. It is only after sweeping away all religion and after tearing up even to the last roots every religious idea that we can arrive at our political and social ideal. Down then with God and with Christ, down with the despots of heaven and earth, death to the priests. Such is the motto of our grand crusade. And they carried it out as well, that death to the priests, and massacred millions of them. Millions
every
of Christians.
Yeah.
Millions of priests. And that is central to their revolutions. And this was their declaration. Association of Workmen, the support of the workers. It was the church that always supported the workers, that fed the people, fed the poor, educated the poor. Or it was the church lands that the monks worked on to create their mead and to make beer and collect the corn and work on the farms. And they would provide all this food for the parish that was around them. they were the ones feeding the workers. So you can tell that this wasn't an association that was actually designed by workmen. It was an association that was created by Freemasons to try and appeal to workmen, to use the workmen as their proxies to destroy the Christian state and the Christian idea.
The Soviet Union.
Yeah, and when it didn't work, they decided that instead of using the workers of the world, they would use the minorities of the world. And they would effectively create these minorities by saying that the white man has been persecuting them and oppressing them. And they created a homosexual community. There wasn't such a thing as a homosexual community. There were the odd homosexuals, but they didn't see themselves primarily as that, as that's their identity. They saw themselves as Italian or American or German or whatever, and they kept that to themselves. But they were told that their identity is as a homosexual, and you've been persecuted all this time because that's your identity. And then the same with blacks, who were quite happy in their segregation. They were told, no, you've been oppressed, you're not as wealthy as the white people here, you should have what they have, you should be living with them, you should be in their schools. And they caused the minorities to resent the people that were living with them in their country, and that's causing this division. They'll say diversity is a strength, but they caused all this division between the peoples, whereas we all used to get on before. There was no problem with, blacks rising up. They had their own way of doing things right up until
of the Black Lives Matter was talking to on talk radio. And he was more or less saying that he was against capitalism and all these other things. And you know, there was no doubt in his mind he were a communist. Because when asked if he was proud to be British, his answer was, "I'm an international."
Well, yeah, you can see it today. The link between Black Lives Matter and communism. And I mean, some people may say, well, what about the civil rights and the riots in the 60s? Well, it was the cultural Marxists in the Frankfurt School that were stirring that up, and these communists that were stirring that up. The leaders of the black civil rights groups, they were all Jewish and they were all communist. And this was part of their plan, was to use the minorities to bash down the patriarchy and cause a revolution, because the workers of the world didn't want it. You know, some of them were quite happy working for their boss. They knew that they didn't have the brains to run the business or operate at that level. They were quite happy to work at the level they were working at. They didn't want to, because maybe they understood as well that if they did take the boss out of the picture, it wouldn't be them running things. It would be another boss that would step
in. Another boss, yeah.
Which is what happened.
Which is the lyrics, "Won't Get Fooled Again." I mean, the new boss, same as the old boss.
Worse than the old boss. It's always better the devil you know. They'll always be worse than the old boss. And now we get to the Jewish hand behind Freemasonry. In a note on page 20 of the original edition, I keep forgetting, it's not Magister, it's Monsignor. In a note on page 20 of the original edition, Monsignor Dillon returned to the question of the direction of Freemasonry, which he had mentioned in his preface. He there says, "The Jewish connection with modern Freemasonry is an established fact everywhere manifested in its history. The Jewish formulas employed by Freemasonry, the Jewish traditions which run through its ceremonial, point to a Jewish origin or to the work of Jewish contrivers. But behind the atheism and desire of gain, which impels them to urge on Christians to persecute the church and destroy it, there lies a hidden hope to reconstruct their temple. And in the darkest depths of secret society plotting, there lurks a deeper society still, which looks to a return to the land of Judah and to the rebuilding of the temple of Jerusalem. These remarks can furnish the starting point for a deeper examination of the whole question of secret societies and their action, studied in the light of the encyclicals of the sovereign pontiffs and of history." And I'll just stop there, because obviously this was written before they got Israel, when they went back to the land of Judah. And that's what they're doing now, isn't it? Is talking about rebuilding the temple now that they're there.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a funny thing I noticed as well this week. I don't know when it was, but Netanyahu wants to microchip all the kids and possibly even the parents, but mainly the children. And the Christians in America, the evangelists, have stayed stone silent because this is the mark of the beast, which was mentioned in the Bible. And there's just been a stone silence.
Well, I'm sure he'd be happy if he can get people to do that because, you know, that's what they want to do is get people to reject Christianity. Yeah. That's, you know, that is what they do. They resent Christianity themselves. They resent Christ. They rejected Christ and Christianity. And that's been their defining moment, really, of the history, of the Jews' history. And that's the central part to their religion and what they do. And that's there to strengthen our faith and to increase our virtue when we resist against it. Continuing here, he adds that it is no longer debatable that if the false leaders of the Jews did not originate the secret societies to cover their own anti-Christian activities and to influence credulous members of the Christian communities, they had a great deal to do with the business. The degrees and ritual of Freemasonry are shot through with Jewish symbolism. The candidate is going to the east, towards Jerusalem. He is going to rebuild the temple, which was destroyed in fulfillment of the prophecy of Christ. The Grand Orient and Scottish Rite Lodges, sources of so many modern revolutions, are more militant, more open, and apparently more virulent than some of the others whom they are leading into a single world organization by gradual steps. And that's what we have now, is the single world organization. But he's pointing out here that the degrees and the rituals, they're all shot through with Jewish symbolism. And it's all about Jerusalem, rebuilding the temple. So, you know, you can't say that that's a conspiracy theory. Freemasonry is riddled with Jewish ideas.
Sorry.
It's not arguable. Over and above the struggle against the self-centered tendencies of individual souls, the Catholic Church, the mystical body of Christ, has to face the persistent opposition of the Jewish nation. According to the leaders of the Jewish nation, now as 1900 years ago, the union of the nations is not meant by God to take place through entrance into and acceptance of the supranational kingdom of our Lord's mystical body, but through acceptance and submission to the naturalistic messianism of the Jewish nation. So what he's saying there is, according to Christianity, we're supposed to have a union like the Commonwealth. We're supposed to have a union in the church, as I was saying, with sovereign nations, with Christ as the Messiah. According to the rabbis and the Jewish idea, the Jewish nation themselves are a Messiah, and us as the Gentiles should be ruled over by them. And we should be looking to them to lead us, basically. And that's why they're saying what they're trying to push for is this world union, the new world order, the UN, the EU, all of these organizations that have Jews as elevated peoples within that with a lot of influence on that. I mean, you just have to look at the British Board of Jewish Deputies, the influence they had on the Labour Party. They have their own European Union section. You look at the influence they have in America. And what he's saying here is that this has been going on for 1900 years because the Jews see it as a prophecy that they should be ruling the world. So they work towards that, and they work towards getting a union of Gentile nations with them leading. Whereas the Catholic Church's position is, we have a union of Christian nations with Christ leading. So
can I just mention the fact that the UN, when they say they talk about human rights, it really depends, like, because as you know, many of the Talmudic Jews don't look at Gentiles as human. So you have no rights if they ever come to power.
Yeah, I'm trying to not really go too deeply into some of the really nasty things that they actually say about Gentiles, but just to say this is the dichotomy that's there. You've got the Jews that see prophecy as them being the chosen people and they should be ruling, and then you've got the Christian belief that we should be together as Christian nations with Christ as our leader, which is like in the Old Testament, the Israelites, they had God as their leader. And, you know, they weren't happy with that, though. They wanted to have a king, but they were supposed to have God as their king, as their leader. And as today's Christians, the church itself is Israel, not these Jews, but the mm-hmm. Christians, the body of Christ, the Christians is actually Israel. The Jews hijack that name to call their country it, which shows you this position that they have, where they can take the name of the church and take it over themselves. Yeah. Well, this is made very clear in the letter from the chief rabbi of Palestine, which appeared in the Irish Independent of January the 6th, 1948. Referring to the establishment of the new state of Israel, Rabbi Herzog said, "Eventually, it will lead to the inauguration of the true union of the nations, through which will be fulfilled the eternal message to mankind of our immortal prophets." So he's saying there, we have Jewish prophecies which say that we will rule over a union of the nations. And that's what they've been trying to put in place, and that's what the Catholic Church was trying to fight against, and that was what the Freemasons were working towards.
The foot soldiers for that movement.
Yeah, without the majority of the Freemasons understanding that that's what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. The author wants to make a clear distinction between hatred of the Jewish nation, which is anti-Semitism, and opposition to Jewish and Masonic naturalism. By naturalism, he means against supernaturalism. So atheism, communism, the elevation of man, human rights, all that sort of stuff. He's saying mm-hmm. that's what the church is against. That's not anti-Semitism. It's just against things that Jews mainly push, ideas which are associated with them, which they admit are their ideas. And of course, you get accused of anti-Semitism today for saying it, but that is the way it is. And the author is making this distinction. This opposition on the part of Catholics must be mainly positive by acknowledging not only individually, but socially, the rights of the supernatural kingship of Christ and his church, and by striving politically to get these rights acknowledged by states and in public space. For this indispensable undertaking, the active and effective union of Catholics is an absolute necessity. So he's saying that Catholics should be pushing for the rights of the kingship of Christ and his church, and having those as political rights, not a separate thing to do with the church. And we should be doing that as a group, and we should be doing that individually. And that should be our opposition. And that's not anti-Semitism. That's just being a good Christian. He says, space does not allow of lengthy quotations from papal documents to show that, on the one hand, the sovereign pontiff insists that Catholics must stand unflinchingly for the integral rights of Christ the King, as contained in the papal encyclicals, while on the other hand, keeping their minds and hearts free from hatred of our Lord's own nation according to the flesh. And of course, they believe that today's Jews are the descendants of the Israelites, and of course they're not. Genetic studies have showed that they're Canaanites, but that still doesn't mean that we should be hating them. We shouldn't have hate in our hearts for them. We should understand what the negative things that they are responsible for, and we should reject those negative things, but we shouldn't have hatred for them. They're just the way that they are. Mm-hmm. They can't be changed. It's our own people that shouldn't be doing what they're doing, basically. I mean, that's the way I see it. It's our own traitors that are the ones that are really guilty. The Jews are just doing what comes naturally to them.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of these so-called leaders are suspect of the old bribery too. That's the problem.
Definitely. Well, we've reached the end of the podcast here, Dennis. We've got some more to go on anti-Semitism here, but we'll get into that next week, I think. So thank you very much for coming on today.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We will be back next Friday with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.